The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show. We have breaking news as the day is progressing. This is one of those busy days involving lots and lots of different fronts. And we will bring it all to you over the next hour. Pedro Gomez for our weekly segment, as we always talk with Pedro. Things going on around the baseball front. We will talk to Pedro. We have some other guests that we are working on today's show that are at the league meetings in the NFL. We knew this morning that the Super Bowl was going to be awarded to Phoenix. We talked about that yesterday, and actually earlier in this week when the news first broke. And Roger Goodell has, in fact, informed that the Super Bowl is coming to Arizona. What does this mean? Well, tonight there's a press conference at 6 o'clock. Beyond that, the Super Bowl being back here, the Final Four next week, there will be some news on the Final Four and Phoenix. Not that it's coming back, but they're being looked at again. And that leaves the college football playoff as the one biggest event, the mega events, as I like to call them, that is up in the air. And we were not going to see a college football playoff till I believe 24-25 is the next years that they are open, for those that have asked. So the Super Bowl clearly is a big story, but the bigger story is what the NFL decided to do today. The announcement of the Cardinals getting the state of Arizona and Glendale getting a Super Bowl got completely thrown to page 20, I guess. Got run over, because shortly after the announcement of the Super Bowl, the owners announced that they've approved a new national anthem policy. This will require players to stand on the field or they can remain in the locker room. We're going to get into this here in a couple of minutes. So I've got some thoughts on that. Where the Diamondbacks last night were just dreadful. The playoffs were pretty good. And a few other things that are on my mind. Let's get to Off and Running, though, brought to you by Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. Just log on to sagicornow.com. Log on, get your free quote, no waiting, no hassle. Just go right through the process, and you've got to get your life insurance taken care of, guys. Do not put it off. That's at Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Make sure you log on. Pedro Gomez here in about 10 minutes. So this whole first segment is going to be about the anthem. And in my view on this deal, if you're not familiar with what has transpired here in the last hour, NFL owners have unanimously approved a new national anthem policy that requires players to stand if they are on the field during the performance, but gives them the option to remain in the locker room if they prefer. This was announced today. It's the owner's way of saying, all right, we want the focus to be on the field for football because our product has been severely damaged on a national scale. Advertisers have looked at us sideways. Conservative base says, what are you guys doing? Football fans have been turned off by this and have said, I'm not going to watch NFL. Most of them have come back. But this clearly became a much bigger deal. Colin Kaepernick has been viewed as blackballed. The same goes for Eric Reid. It's hard to dispute that. I mean, it really is. When I watched Blaine Gabbert this last season on the field and didn't see Colin Kaepernick, even here in a Cardinal uniform, it's like, what's going on here? Why is he not playing? Eric Reid's very good in the secondary. So Goodell said this morning, this season, all league and team personnel shall stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. Personnel choose not to stand for the anthem may stay in the locker room until the anthem has been performed. This seems to me to be a pretty easy way to solve the situation on one hand. On the other hand, it seems like a pretty simple cop-out by the NFL. Players, you don't want to stand? Fine. You're going to stay here in the locker room. You're not going to embarrass us out in front of everybody. So what's going to happen up in the press box? What's going to happen out in the stands with fans that have their binoculars? Are they going to stand there and or their phones? And they're going to look around and see who's standing and who's not standing, who's not out on the field for the anthem. And after the game is over, why have you not stood for the anthem? So there is going to be websites that will want to put this type of information out there. My stance has been, you have the right and you have the freedom to choose as you wish, but you are an employee of the brand of the National Football League. Thus, if you decide you want to take a knee and you're hurting the business and the bottom line, I get it as an owner. I really do. I've said many times on this show and shows in the past that when I go to the games and the national anthem sometimes feels like American Idol or Star Search. How long is this anthem going to go? And why is it this person is out there performing? It doesn't mean I'm disrespecting the anthem. It's I've found it at times to be a little much. Let's wrap ourselves in the flag to make sure that we have our partners all in place and our partners are all happy with us. And at times it felt a little half-hearted on part of sports. Like the anthems, we have to make sure that we don't offend anybody versus this is the right thing to do. There is a difference. It's like a business arrangement that all we want is a check. Well, no, it's actually a partnership, guys. And so they're trying to make this believe that they are addressing this issue. Quoting Goodell, we believe today's decision will keep our focus on the game, in the extraordinary athletes who play it, and on our fans who enjoy it. A vote took place at the conclusion of the league's spring meetings. It was approved by all 32 owners. I saw Michael Bidwell up on screen earlier about this, and I did not hear him. He is going to speak tonight at 6 o'clock here in Phoenix, actually up at Sanctuary, about the Super Bowl. He's going to be asked about this. If they say, well, we're not going to talk about that, that's crazy. So owners trying to get this to be a compromise that will either end sitting or kneeling with an edict that stops short of requiring every player to stand. I have not heard from the players yet. I've reached out to some players to jump on board with us. If you remember, Jerry Jones, Bob McNair wanted all players to stand. The Jets' Christopher Johnson wanted to avoid any appearance of muzzling players. The seemingly simple option of clearing the field prior to the anthem was rejected by some owners who thought it would be interpreted as mass protest or at least a sign of disrespect. Well, let me fill you in on something. There's going to be some players. You can guarantee this. Take this one to the bank. There's going to be some players that will say, guys, let's not go out onto the field for the anthem. I don't know if there's going to be entire teams. I don't know that. But there may be some teams where 20 players, 30 players, 50 players say, we're not going out on the field for the anthem. They now have that right. There's some players, in all honesty, who I believe would rather stay in the locker room and stretch and warm up and be involved and don't want to be out on the field or need to be out on the field. And there's nothing wrong with that. Does that mean they're being disrespectful? And this has kind of put the players in a box where you better go out on the field because some people are going to call you out. Where in a player's mind, maybe he doesn't want to be out there during the anthem all along, and he's as patriotic as the next person. So now he's just going out there I have to do this because I don't want anybody to call me out. It's got to be a sign of respect. Respect could be sitting in front of his locker or her locker in deep thought, deep prayer, before they go out and they play on the field. Does it have to be standing at attention with a hand over a heart? Is this merely a way for the NFL to get around it? Eric, where are you at on this one? I feel like the players are now put into a box where the media side is going to hammer them. They're going to, behind the scenes, it'll be, look what happened to Kaepernick. Look what happened to Eric Reed.
I would think most players don't really care about standing for the anthem.
I would agree with you.
Not just in the NFL, but like if you see
any sporting event.
Well, I think, again, I'm casting a broad net, but I would think the sport where the players are the most into the anthem would be Major League Baseball because it's the most traditional of all the big sports. But you go to an NBA game and you watch the NBA players during the anthem, and very few of them are staring at the flag. Very few of them have their hand on their heart. Very few of them are.
They're usually looking down, fidgeting.
Yes. They're usually doing something.
They're thinking about their game.
And that's their prerogative. Like you said, they can do what they want. But the NFL is, I mean, this is like the perfect loophole for the NFL because like they're appeasing the players gently and they're trying to put out this massive fire that started last year.
But are they appeasing the players? Or are they putting the players into a box?
I don't think so. I mean, there's so many players, Brad, on an NFL roster that I don't really think fans are going to go to the game and say, hey, did you see that Larry Fitzgerald wasn't out for the national anthem, because in some sports they don't even come out for the anthem. So
I think there's going to be some players that will say, I need to stay inside and stretch or do whatever. I don't need to be out there for the anthem. If 10 Cardinal players came out of the locker room and stood on the sideline, you know, and I know that it would become a major story here, even though I think the players have every right. I'm always on the players' side.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, Brad, I'm curious to see what Pedro Gomez says, because he's down on fields before games, in you know, down on football fields, down on baseball fields. He would probably have a pretty interesting take on this.
Yeah, and we'll talk to Pedro next. Well done.
Thank you.
Pedro Gomez is on the other side, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I do want to talk to Pedro about this, in all seriousness. I don't really know where to start with why the Diamondbacks stink so badly. Last night, losing on a sack fly, and that was it. And Goldschmidt striking out looking in the ninth inning again. I don't know if Pedro has seen a player spiral. And I'm the guy that's been sitting here for the last year saying, you got to extend him. And I'm sure the Diamondbacks privately are saying, this is why we didn't extend him. I don't know. We'll talk to Pedro next. Stay with us. Here now is Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider Analyst. The free-falling Diamondbacks are losing as we speak. I'll get into that in a minute. But first, the news of the day, and that is Roger Goodell going through the anthem policy, where players are now going to be allowed to stay in the locker room, and you'll be fined if you're on the field and you do not stand, if you kneel there, and so on and so forth. All right, what's your view of all of this by the NFL today? Because you and I have been in stadiums, you more than me, through the last few years. Anthems are played all the time. Do players pay attention? What's the NFL's view on this from your point of view?
You know, after 9-1-1, yes, players absolutely paid attention. And before then, it kind of was, you know, everybody talking to each other. You were standing, but it wasn't quite the same. But I think it's been so long since 9/11 that you're almost getting back to the point where a lot of players are just kind of, it's just one of those things they have to do for 90 seconds every day. And you don't see them really thinking about the anthem. And I'm not sure that athletes throughout the decades have truly thought about it, other than maybe after something big happened, after World War II, after, you know, the Vietnam War, possibly after 9/11, certainly, where it becomes a rallying point. But then it just kind of fades into the background, and a lot of people don't really pay attention to it. It's just one of those things. It's a kind of almost a ritual that you have to do. I'm just being honest here. Mm-hmm. When you look across and see people standing, the fans, the players, whoever, I don't think there's a lot of attention being given to it. And obviously, with what happened with Colin Kaepernick a few years ago and NFL players within the last two seasons, it's gotten a lot of attention again. And I heard about the fines and everything. I know that would never happen in baseball, because that would have to be collectively bargained, and the players' union is so strong. I'm surprised the NFL players' union hasn't come out yet and said, no, you can't fine for this.
Well, and the vote took place this morning, and I am waiting to hear from the players' union side on this, to your point. The idea of them staying in the locker room, I actually think most athletes in any sport would rather stay in the locker room. Eric brought it up earlier. We see it at, if it's an NBA game, the players are looking down, they're fidgeting, they're moving around. Yeah, they're all lined up across from each other, but I think they'd rather be running through the tunnel and staying loose. Baseball, I think you're exactly right with that baseball games, I don't see where there's that great moment. Even on Sundays where the Diamondbacks will do God Bless America in the seventh inning, I see people on their cell phones texting, going up, getting concessions. It isn't what it once was, and people are trying to force this down people's throats on one hand. The other hand, there is the respect factor. So I get what the NFL is trying to do on one hand. It's a pretty simple way to go. I think the players, Pedro, on this one are kind of backed into a corner, though. The way that the owners put this out today, if you're not out on the field, you know there's going to be people saying, well, why is this guy not out there? Why is that guy not out there? There's going to be teams where 15, 20 players may decide to not go out. Is that going to harm the brand even further?
Yeah, there's no doubt that there will be a scorecard, so to speak, and we'll, you know, people will be keeping score, who's out, who's not out. I think that is absolutely going to happen. But then you see in baseball where, you know, the players line up in front of the dugout.
Yep.
But there are still plenty of players sometimes that are inside the tunnel doing whatever, loosening up, whatever it is that they're doing, because we can't see them at that point. And you don't see all 25 players out on the line. Yeah, you see it for things like the All-Star game or postseason games where everybody is lined up out there during introductions. But during a regular season game, I would venture to say that sometimes you see 8 or 10 or 12 players maybe. Mm-hmm. Certainly the coaching staff is normally out there, but you don't see all 25 players out there. So, you know, and nobody seems to mind it in baseball, probably because it hasn't had the same focal point that the NFL has had with players kneeling, which is more of a political statement, whether it be against, you know, police brutality, whatever it is they choose to make of their effort to bring kind of the spotlight to whatever it is they want to bring it to. But in the case of the NFL, it's really going to be difficult because it has become such a flashpoint issue in the NFL over the course of the last two or three seasons. And again, I'm curious to see what the players' union comes out and says on this issue.
Well, George Atala from the players' union, you ask, I'll give you quote: "We were not consulted ahead of this meeting on any potential changes to the anthem policy. If there are changes to the policy and put players in a position where they could be disciplined or fined, we're going to do what we always do, fight anything that encroaches on players' rights to the end." So that's from the players' union. So, you know, obviously this is not done, but for him to say they weren't even consulted by the NFL, that's not surprising to me, just the way the NFL has been.
No, because, you know, it is still a business, and I think the NFL saw the dip in ratings, and they're concerned. And whether that is because of players kneeling or simply because the sport is so physical that maybe people are being turned off by it, mm-hmm. you know, with all the CTE issues that have come up, who knows what the real reason is. Maybe it's just overload with so many sports on television now that people are just not as interested in watching all the time. So, you know, they know that their ratings dipped last couple of seasons, and they're seeing if possibly it's because of this. You've certainly heard that it could be because of players kneeling. Personally, I really don't know anybody personally who has said, I'm no longer watching the game because players kneel.
Yeah,
I know that's been said, and I know that there are people who have written about that, but I personally don't know anybody who has taking that stance.
And I know a couple people who've taken that stance. I think it's more, it's this is part of it. The quality of the NFL, especially in September and October, it's nothing more than just beyond glorified putrid football in August, which really isn't the sport that it is once you get into November and December. It's become the sport of attrition, really. And I think this is part of an overarching sport that has got many, many issues. Pedro Gomez with us. Let me get over to the issue of the Diamondbacks. Speaking of overarching issues, they're losing again today. Okay, what is going on? You can point to they can't hit, but this is a free fall of free falls that's going on here.
It is. I mean, when you lose 12 of 13, there are issues going on. You know, if you lose 5 of 6, that can happen. There's no doubt that happens. But 12 of 13 is really showing more of a pattern. And obviously the offense has struggled mightily. And there's one person right smack dab in the middle of that lineup who stands out as the biggest offender in terms of being of the slump, overall slump that's going on, and that's Paul Goldschmidt. When you see Paul Goldschmidt hitting under 200 and we're in late May, that's more than a small sample size. This is more than a quarter of the season in, and you're talking about one of the best players in the game who has finished in the top five in MVP voting a few times. And, you know, a lot of times when your best player is struggling, it's going to affect everything else. And I think that seriously is what's going on, because it's not like the D-backs have had some juggernaut offense the last few seasons, but Goldschmidt has been the gold standard, so to speak. And I didn't mean that as a pun. And him hitting 300 or around 300, knocking in over 110 runs and hitting 30 to 35 home runs over the course of a season, that's what everybody has been accustomed to. And we're not talking about a player who is now age 37, 38, who's on the back end of his career. These should still be peak years for Goldschmidt. And, you know, he has got to snap out of it. Now, his track record indicates that at the end of the season, he will have the numbers that he normally does, or at least close. But boy, right now, it's hard to believe that that's going to happen, because he just looks lost at the plate. And it's one of those things that becomes a vicious cycle, Brad, where a player steps into the box and in the back of his mind, he's thinking, I can't strike out, I can't strike out, I can't strike out. And sure enough, that's what happens. And I'm not sure how to get him out of it. Maybe batting him seventh or eighth in the lineup, or, you know, I've talked to managers who believe if a guy is struggling, you move him up in the lineup rather than down.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe put Goldschmidt batting second, because it's so different for him, and it's such an offensive take to try to get your guy going, that maybe Torrey Lovullo, you know, might look at something like that.
Well, here's the thing on it, Pedro. We've had guests. I've read a lot of stuff. You've talked to people, I'm sure. I guess what I'm wondering at this point, it's the JD's not here, changing his swing. He wasn't that great at the end of last season, on and on and on. I'm looking at it now as the Diamondbacks, for the last few years, Derek came on with us and said, yeah, we don't need to address Paul's contract. We don't need to address Paul's contract, so on and so forth. We had a point, he's a year and a half away now, and the team's starting to go through this free fall. I don't know if they're going to come out of it. Is Paul somebody you have to keep, or are you hearing potentially as he just hit a home run as you and I are sitting here speaking? I just looked up. He hit a home run in Milwaukee. Okay. So I'm an idiot. No, I'm just wondering in all fairness, because he could go keep struggling here, but is it something where you're hearing from scouts that this is not going to get fixed with him? It is messed up.
No. When I talk to some advanced scouts, they think that it's one of those classic signs where a hitter is truly in a slump and he's doubting himself more than anything. It's more mental right now with Goldschmidt is what they believe, because he is taking horrible swings, obviously not the home run he just hit, but horrible swings, really. Things that he was very disciplined at the plate. And maybe it is because JD's not here and he thinks, I've got to carry more of the load,
mm-hmm.
especially with Steven Souza being, you know, going back on the disabled list and not being in the lineup other than for a handful of games so far this season. And Souza has a big bat who can definitely help. He's not a JD Martinez, but he's got a big bat and can help. So it could be one of those things where Goldschmidt simply is saying, I got to carry the load more than ever before, because we're in first place. You know, this is, I'm talking about over the course of the last 6 weeks. And if I don't do it, there's nobody here that can. And those are the things where you spiral downward rather than upward. And so that's what scouts are telling me, that it's more about plate discipline than anything. And right now, Goldschmidt, what they told me, is getting himself out. It's not like pitchers are making these incredible pitches on him. He's getting himself out. And that normally is a big sign or indicator that it's mental more than anything.
All right. Anything else going on in your world before I let you go?
My last child will graduate Desert Vista High School tomorrow night.
There you go.
Our third one through DV.
That is awesome. Good for you. And that's awesome to hear. I'll let you go off that. Thanks for your time as always.
Okay, Brad.
There, take care. There's Pedro Gomez. Desert Vista proud dad. I'll get it right. I'm sitting here asking a question about why Goldschmidt stinks and he hits a home run. That's awesome. The timing was great. They're playing a day game today. Doesn't mean you turn it. There's some things going on the recruiting front. with Arizona State and Arizona in football, the ASU is not even ranked in the top 100 right now. And you guys know how I am about lists and all that stuff. But there's a point where you have to look around a little bit here and say, what is going on? And same with U of A, they're not doing much better. We'll get into that next in the NBA playoffs too. Stay with us. Just checking on the website during the commercial break. Jeff Munn's got a really good story up on GCU baseball. You're going out to that, righty? You're going to go, I may try to swing out there too over at Ho-Ho Cam.
Yeah, I'll be out there tomorrow.
For the WAC tournament. We don't know who they're playing yet, right,
GCU? We do not.
So that is
tomorrow. Well, I'm not sure. I went on GCU's website and the team was not up there, but I have not really been completely following WAC baseball. So.
Wow, shocking. Me either. Talk to the Lopes, though, comes up this week. Guest this week. I'm the host, obviously. The guest is GCU pitching coach Rich Dorman. So we will have him coming up. I've had a hard time talking today. If you notice that, I've just had one of those days where it's just bang me upside the head. I don't know. Jeff has a really good story up on the site about the WAC and the WAC tournament and all that. I want to do some college football here just a little bit because we do a ton of it here on the show and on the site. I'm not one that pays much attention to recruiting rankings because usually what happens in recruiting classes, most of them don't work out. If you go through a 25 recruitment class, I don't know, half, sometimes even more than half, doesn't pan out. You'll get those 6, 7, 8, 9 guys. And I'm referring primarily to Arizona State and Arizona, and even times 6, 7, 8 is high. You would hope that each class you could find 2, 3 NFL guys, right? 3, 4 NFL guys. Was it not this year, but last year was just a kicker. That was it from ASU. This year there was no high-end first-round pick or second-round pick. Next year there will be with N'Keal Harry. There's no question about it. I think Chase Lucas has a big future in front of him. But I had some people that sent me some stuff on the recruiting end. They were out the other night at our Chandler School District event where we had all the top coaches out there from on the football end. And Sean Aguano at Chandler High, who sends out 15 so Division I guys every year. And these were fans who are very concerned about where Arizona State and Arizona are off of recruiting rankings. And like I said, I'm not going to go too high or too low off this, but I do think it's worth noting because some people live by this stuff. 247sports.com. They do a nice job. There's very good people there. We've had some of them on the show before. Brandon Huffman and Greg Biggins and very good people. Jason, of course, does his thing with us, Jason Jewell. Arizona is ranked 78th out of 104 Division I schools, if I'm to go off of 247sportsrecruiting.com so far in the class of 2019. Players that will sign, they can sign at the end of December 20th for the 2019 class, and then the big signing day will be next February. Arizona State is not in the top 104. And there's schools all over in the top 104 that you look at and say, how is it that this school or that school at Arizona State is not in the top 100 right now with Herm Edwards? They have not gone out and gotten anybody in the state of Arizona to this point that I have seen. They've offered people. They're not getting them. Oregon, on the other hand, is ranked in the top 15, the highest ranked school within the Pac-12 conference. And the Ducks are killing it under Mario Cristobal. Mario Cristobal went out and got 4 transfers, including one of the best linemen in the nation, Dallas Warmack, out of Alabama, who just showed up on campus at Oregon. He's a fifth-year senior. Landed a top running back in the country this year, Sean Dollars, number one all-purpose back in the country, going to Oregon this year. Yeah, Oregon's come into Arizona, and they've taken players away. Washington has come into Arizona, and they've taken players away. We're sitting here in May. You may think this is the doldrums. This is actually a high season right now when it comes to recruiting. Players are getting offers all over the place. And so far, Eric, you're into this space quite a bit. There's not anybody that has sat with you that has said, I'm considering U of A and ASU in a high level.
No. But in fairness to Kevin Sumlin and his staff down in Tucson, they've put a big focus on the 2020 class because they started so late on the 2019 class. As for ASU, Brad, I talked to someone who follows the recruiting really closely last night, and he told me that of the top 20 to 25 kids that ASU will offer in-state from the 2019 class, they'll be lucky to get two or three of those kids.
And so people want to bang on Herm for that, but is this something where he came in December, right? And usually when a coaching change is made, there's that initial burst. There's that initial buzz.
Which I think there was, but I don't know if it was. There was a buzz for other reasons, and it didn't really have to do with anything.
Yeah, I mean,
recruiting specific. It was like, what is ASU doing? Who is this person they're bringing in?
Right.
Why is Herm Edwards the guy to turn around this program? Blah, blah, blah.
But I think it's very fair.
No, there's no doubt.
It's very fair to say, okay, what's going on at this point? I'm not saying that they should be chopping heads or anything, but in the 6 month time that Herm has come here, they have not been able to get anything turned around here in state. They brought in Antonio Pierce. We're going to be able to go into Los Angeles, and we're going to go get stud players all over the place.
Maybe. I mean, that's still to be determined.
Maybe.
But I will tell you, Brad, last week at Saguaro's showcase, where it was Saguaro, Higley, and Centennial, ASU had a couple coaches there. And, I mean, like, when ASU walks on a campus now, there's not a big buzz. There's not a huge draw. There's not a bunch of players coming up talking to the coaches. It's fine that ASU's there. It's great that they're there. But you just get the sense that these in-state kids, unless they are first offered by ASU, like N'Keal Harry, Brandon Ruiz, some of the other ones that they have signed, Chase Lucas, that's where they're going to go. And if ASU gets in late on them or mistargets them, you know, like Tyler Shuck fell through the cracks, a lot of really good players that ASU didn't offer until the last minute, you're going to see these kids saying, I'm good. You know, and ASU and U of A aren't winning, which doesn't help anything. I mean, when you're consistently a 5 to 6 to 7 win team and you have bigger, better schools out of state that are hitting on you and offering you, why would you go to either of the in-state schools?
Well, like I've heard that ASU is asked for and is going to get Chuba Purdy, Brock Purdy's little brother, who's very good. He's over at Perry. He's an incoming junior. I've heard that they've asked for his transcript and that he is going to go visit them. They have a camp coming up, so he's going to go to the camp. I guess it's the best way to put it.
That's fine, but he may not even be the starting quarterback this year.
Right, right.
So.
Well, but the fact that they're even paying attention to him says that they're trying to get the thing turned around. So there's that concern. What about this story, Eric, that came out last night, and that is USF is going to play the University of Florida. They're going to play them in a three-game series starting in 2020. The catch here is, the Bulls and the Gators have not played much against one another. One of the games is going to be played at USF.
It's great.
So let's bring that closer to here. What would it be like if ASU or U of A played at Flagstaff?
You can't compare the two because USF is a Division I program.
What would it be like if they played in Flagstaff?
That's never going to happen. I can't see ASU or U of A going to Flagstaff to play any sport.
Could you see Florida going to play USF?
Sure.
It's never happened. Why
but,
now?
But USF is a bigger school than NAU.
It's a bigger school. I understand that.
It's not a Group of Five school, but
I understand that, and this is FCS. I get it. Just hear me out. If one of those two programs said, we'll play you in a three-game series, but we will play one of those in Flagstaff, what would that do for the city of Flagstaff?
Be huge.
What would that do for revenue potential for NAU? What would it be like to have a ASU or U of A team walk onto the football field at the Sky Dome? Now, you've said it will never happen.
I'd love to see it. I just can't imagine ASU or U of A agreeing to something like that because it's a total no-win situation for those big schools.
What's the win for Florida?
Well, I mean, they're...
Is it because it's Florida and there's going to Tampa is in USF's backyard?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're trying to recruit in the Tampa area. Is that the win?
I mean, Like, I see what you're saying, but I just can't make the comparison because that, like you said, NAU is in the Big Sky.
They have to play them. They come down the hill every year. Mm-hmm. Most every year, it ends up not being something that is really that great of a game.
Right.
It's really not that competitive, but the Regents like to see it happen. I'm looking at things as the evolving and the changing of the landscape. I don't know where NAU is going to go with this. There's more population up there than there's been in years past. I don't know if they're going to try to become a Division I program. I don't know any of this. I'm merely looking at what they did in Florida, and I think it's really cool. I think it's really cool. And those that have been doing their thing at ASU for 15, 20, 30 years, they would just roll their eyes and say, this will never happen. You should never be in the space of it will never happen, ever, in anything you do. If you're like that, get out. We're back after this time out. All right, a few other things before we get out of here. The Pac-12 football 2018 all-conference team has been released by Athlon. Athlon does a good job. Eric, we can have some fun with this. So Khalil Tate made the quarterback over Jake Browning, Tyler Huntley at Utah, and Justin Herbert at Oregon. We don't have any problem with that.
No.
Bryce Love made the running back over Patrick Laird at Cal.
You don't even have to go over the list. Just go to the next one. I mean, he's the best. He's going to win the Heisman probably, so.
No. Guess who was third? Eno Benjamin.
It's good.
Of ASU.
I can see that.
The other running back spot, they had Zach Moss from Utah. No, I agree with you about Bryce Love. I mean, Khalil Tate and Bryce Love, there's some star power. Wide receiver, N'Keal Harry. Number one.
No surprise. Well deserved.
Miles Gaskin from Washington was the all-purpose back.
Again, no problem with
That's not a problem. The other wide receiver was Juju Whiteside at Stanford. Demetrius Robertson at Cal and Dylan Mitchell at Oregon. Nobody from ASU or U of A. Tight end was Caden Smith at Stanford. He's a beast. Caleb Wilson at UCLA was second. On the line, there was no Sun Devils, no Wildcats. Over on defense, Caron Crump made third team defensive line.
Really good player. Good news that ASU is getting him back for another year because they need him.
They do need him. Kylan Wilborn at linebacker at U of A. Colin Schooler at linebacker for U of A. Colin Schooler is a good player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He is. Like that U of A defense could be good, Brad, because they played a lot of freshmen and sophomores last year. So Sumlin has Khalil Tate and a bunch of returning guys on defense he can build around. So
yeah, Tony Fields was their fourth team
really
linebacker.
Really good safety or linebacker or whatever.
Linebacker. Yep. Yeah. The secondary, you'll like this. So first team, one side is Byron Murphy, local kid. Second team behind him is Chase Lucas. Now, if they would have kept both of them, you know how I am on this.
Mm-hmm.
They would have kept both of them. Oh, my gosh. That's what you want to see.
And the discrepancy between those players, with absolutely no offense to Chase Lucas, is about as wide as the Grand Canyon. So.
The specialists, nobody from ASU and nobody from U of A. Their kicker was Matt Gay. The punters from Utah, kick returner, Stanford.
Wow, Utah with a special teams player on an all-conference team. What a shock.
Cameron Scarlett. And then Shun Brown, the punt returner for U of A.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it. So this is the type of stuff because we are 99 days. If you guys know and follow the show much.
98 too many, if you ask me.
98 too many. We like counting down numbers like the number of days since the Suns had a playoff game. It's coming up to, it'll be 8 years this, Wednesday. This Sunday, we'll have a candle, we'll have a cake. We'll put May 27th, 2010, Suns Spurs. Maybe put some little pictures on a little sheet of who was on the floor for the Suns and dedicate that as the last time that there was a playoff game in Phoenix. Thank you, Robert, very much. Tonight, we have Game 7 in hockey tonight. Game 7, I am going to be watching more than watching the Celtics and Cavs. I'm going to watch Caps Lightning. Who doesn't love a Game 7 in any sport? And last night, the playoffs in the NBA, I watched the end of it. People were ripping Steve Kerr to shreds today for not calling a timeout with 10 seconds remaining to advance the ball up front. He also has a defensive team in Houston that's not that great. And you don't want them to get stretched. Or you don't want them to get set up on defense. So I get it. Still, Kevin Durant not taking a shot in the final 230. That's the stunner of last night's game to me. Edwin Rodriguez, chairman of the board today, to not screw up, because I did all over the place today. Eric Sorensen is our senior executive vice president of everything. Jordy and Haley are out covering stuff. Keep checking back on the website. If you missed any part of this show, it repeats throughout the day, throughout the night, and into tomorrow on sports360az.com and on the Arizona Central site, AZ Sports. So there you go. Have yourself a great day. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics across the Fruited Plain, all sports, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona, 16 airings this week. This week it's Rich Dorman, the pitching coach for Andy Stankiewicz. Talk to the Lopes this week, the focus on the top-seeded Lopes baseball team opening WAC play tomorrow night. Over at Mesa Ho-Ho Cam, I am assuming there's going to be a ton of Havocs over there and a ton of purple. It'll be a lot of fun. So Rich joins us. Talk about where things are. I appreciate it, Coach, and let's just get right into it. How do you feel about coming into the tournament and your staff?
First of all, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I feel like at this point our guys are hungry. You know, I feel like there's a lot to be earned, you know, respect-wise out here this weekend for the WAC conference. I know our starting rotation, you know, they've been getting better as the years progress, so we're in a good spot now. Our bullpen's been coming together really well, too. So just a matter of getting out here and just playing baseball and pitching, making pitches, executing. And if we do that, we should be in a, you know, hopefully dogpiling by the end of this thing.
That's good stuff. Let's go through your journey on how you got to be with Andy over at GCU. This is the finishing up of your second season. Your road was through the Mariners organization. So let's get to how did you come to GCU story?
It basically, when I met Coach Stankiewicz was the field coordinator with the Mariners back in 2010. And then we just kind of kept in touch. You know, he took the job at GCU, left Seattle, and I was still there grinding away in the minor league pitching coach. And we've always just kept in touch. There's that mutual respect for what, you know, each other believe about baseball and how we approach what we do. And so when the spot became available, you know, reached out to me, and I've been wanting to kind of lean towards college for a while, and so the opportunity came about, and it was kind of the perfect storm. You know, how much, you know, our university's grown and the direction we're going, and I saw the vision, and so that's kind of a couple of years ago how it started, and so you know, it was a great decision for me and my family, and I'm excited to be here with these guys and this team and this university and just be a part of it. So,
How different is it being a pitching coach in a minor league system, being a pitching coach at a college baseball program? Is there any difference? What are the challenges?
Yeah, I mean, in the pro game, you get very skilled players and you get a lot of time to kind of develop. And I think with college, it's you got to develop them quicker, and you need results now. You don't have 140 games to, you know, figure it out by the All-Star break and then have a good second half of the season. You know, here it's a 55-game sprint, 55 Super Bowls, whatever you want to, you know, term it. And so just getting – I think that's kind of the biggest thing I noticed in that regard. But at the same time, I'm still green in coaching college, and I don't know, you know, I'm still learning the ins and outs and the timing of how quickly guys develop from their freshman year to the sophomore year, from their sophomore year to the junior, and just seeing when guys actually take off and start, you know, their skill set comes to fruition. And so I mean that part's challenging. I'm still learning that part of it. The game's the same, obviously, executing pitches. You know, whether you're in pro ball or college or high school, you still have to make pitches and you got to read swings and you got to teach that part of the game. So that part's the same. the running game, you know, all that stuff the same, just the development part of it. You know, that's kind of the biggest things I've noticed.
Rich Dorman with us. He's the pitching coach for GCU. Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics. Tomorrow night, the Lopes Open WAC tournament play. That's over at Hohokam Stadium in Mesa. You know, following up on that a little bit in getting to know your pitchers, let's just break down on Jake Wong. I had Jake on a few weeks back. I remember having Andy on early part of the season, and the team was not having great success in terms of wins and losses. It was a very difficult schedule, and things started to come together, and then things really took off. Tell me about Jake Wong's season and how he has performed for you, and maybe even go back further, Rich, to last year when you first came on board to where he is today.
Yeah, Jake's been an unbelievable talent, and he's just kind of taken on the Friday night role. And I never really, you know, coming from pro ball, I never realized, Friday night, you know, it is a big deal. You have to have your horse pitch on Friday. When you come into a series, you don't know anything much about your opponent, and you just kind of go with strengths on strengths. And then by game three of a series, you kind of figure out the lineup. So it's important. And Wongers took on that role and done a great job for us. You know, his sophomore year, last year, just kind of a one-trick pony, just really hard fastball and some good sink and an okay changeup, and slider was okay. Just it wasn't put away, and it was tough for him to get easy outs with the slider. I feel like, you know, made a couple adjustments with his off-speed pitches with the curveball. Now he gets some easy outs with it, which in turn, you know, by the end of the year, you know, guys have to respect the three pitches. Last year was just kind of, man, he was redlining out, just trying to blow everybody away, and that's exhausting, you know, and so especially when you get deep into a year. So he's in a good spot now in that regard with his arsenal, and he's still learning to read swings. So he's been, you know, just steady. He's been consistent, and that's what you want in pro ball. That's the difference between big leaguers and minor leaguers. Consistency. And you know, Jake settled into his routine, and he's actually turned himself into a really good looking young pitcher who's got a bright future, and just a matter if he stays on the course and does the work and continues to learn, and like I know he would, and he will, because that's just in his character. So but no, he's been great. I mean, I was kind of lucky to my first year to, you know, in college, to have a kid like this, you know. Reminds me a pro ball, so it's good.
Does he remind you of anybody? That's a media question that I hate asking, but fans say, well, does he remind you of anybody? So I have to ask the question. Does he remind you of anybody at the pro level?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's common, you know, intangibles and variables, you know, like he's got the pro fastball. He's got the heavy sink. He's got, you know, he's got pro stuff, which is similar to, you know, I had a reliever, Stephen Pryor, comes to bell, just a heavy, hard sinker, and I see that type of fastball. Now his work ethic and aptitude, you know, like you can put his work ethic and aptitude, you know, it's gotten better, but it's, you know, close to some of the better ones I've worked with. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with him. You know, he can go to the bullpen and start. He can do a lot of things. I'm excited to watch him throw the wood bats too, because it's a good adjustment for a pitcher. Once you get the pro ball, you're throwing the wood bats.
Right. The rest of the staff, I don't want to go through every last one for sake of time, but if there's a pitcher, doesn't matter if it's in your rotation or in your bullpen, that you felt like, you know, at the start of the year, I'm just not quite sure, and now that you're through the regular season, it's, wow, Brad, he has really come on. I feel so good where he is. Do you have one?
There's two that, you know, well, there's more, but I'm that proud dad about my pitchers, but I think he, you know, the unknown for me with Ethan Ivanko, he was coming off Tommy John, he didn't even throw at all. I think last year we just started his throwing progression, so I never really saw him compete. And, you know, the fact that he's come in and look at the numbers that he's put up and the resume he's put together for his, you know, redshirt senior year has been just huge, boost for us and our pitching staff jumping in that Sunday role, and you know, and also the continued development of Vorhoff and watching him just learn to slow the game down and make pitches and not try to get in such a hurry, which, you know, three walks and, shoot, I don't know, 47 punch out. I don't know what he has, but the three walks and 47, that's a pretty nice ratio. And, you know, he fields the position really well. So he's gotten better, too, as years gone. And then, you know, we've got some juniors step up, too, in the bullpen. That, you know, the Haney kid, you know, coming in from a JUCO. This is his first year Division One, and he's thrown some big innings for us and made some big pitches. So there's more guys, obviously, like you said, but due to time, I'll cut it off there.
I got you. Before I let you go, what are you expecting this weekend?
I expect all of our pitchers to get out there and compete and leave it on the mound. You know, I think just pitching with passion. I think there's going to be a high intensity that our guys are going to have to, like, take a step back and just take a breath and go, because it's there's no tomorrow, man. And it, you know, and you get to a conference tournament, I might be the one taking a breath, because such a high intense atmosphere, I'm assuming. So, you know, I know these guys have had some goals, team goals, and we want to continue to check those boxes, and you know, it starts with a good showing this weekend.
I appreciate your time and insight. Good luck, Rich. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. No problem.
You got it. There's Rich Dorman, pitching coach over at GCU. And again, for the Lopes, they're at Mesa Hohokam in WAC tournament play. That is Talk to the Lopes for this week.